How many Pac-12 teams do you think are going to get into the NCAA tournament this year?
That is such a brutal question to ask in late January.
I'm Kay Wynn. Big Ben is stuck in traffic, so he's going to have to catch this episode a little later. But we have a very special guest from Oregon, Bob Lundeberg. Bob, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me back on.
We talked a little Beavs baseball last year, and this year we want to talk Pacific Northwest baseball and basketball. Let's start off with a little basketball, since that's where I prepared, and we can kick things off with last night in Eugene, double OT, Oregon versus USC. Any thoughts on that game last night?
Yeah, it was certainly a pretty entertaining game. I was actually kind of flipping back and forth between the Duke-USC game and then the Oregon State-UCLA game, because both of those games were pretty entertaining finishes. I think it really does go to show that the depth overall in the Pac-12 on the men's side is pretty good this year, because USC has had a couple interesting results, and I guess you can say the same thing about the Ducks, but I don't know what the point spread was, you know, for gambling. I would assume the Ducks were a pretty decent favorite last night, but as we saw, they were given kind of everything they could handle in that game. And, you know, I think Peyton Pritchard is making a really good case to be Pac-12 player of the year, maybe even national player of the year. And really with the way that I think Oregon is playing, certainly, if you're a Duck fan, I think you have to like the way things have been going so far for those guys.
You do. And a milestone night for Peyton Pritchard, I read, where he now has a career where it includes 1,500 career points. I think it's 600 career assists and around 500 career rebounds. And he's the first ever to do it in those three categories.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a really, really special college player, I think. I remember I got to see him play a couple times in high school. He went to Westland High School up just outside of Portland and actually won 4 state championships at Westland. And he's kind of got all the intangibles that you look for in a point guard. And, you know, he started on Oregon's team that went to the Final Four. He wasn't necessarily the star of that team or anything. There were a lot of other NBA guys there, but Peyton, I would say, had a bit of an up and down sophomore and junior years with the Ducks, but my goodness, he really turned it on at the end of last season. I think a lot of people remember the Ducks' really good run in the NCAA tournament, and then he's just kind of kept it going this year. I think Peyton is probably playing himself into maybe a second round NBA draft pick. He's having a really nice senior season.
He's having a great year, and the Ducks right now are currently ranked 12, the highest ranked Pac-12 team. And if you look at their body of work over the whole year, I want to go back to November, Thanksgiving, Feast Week. They were out in the Bahamas. It was the battle for the Atlantis, and the Ducks went 1-2. They beat Seton Hall, who's now number 10. They lost in overtime to the Zags. And then they lost to Carolina when Carolina still had Cole Anthony, a top 10 pick. And I think Peyton, to your point, played well last season, came into this year, played against some great teams and great players, and he's kept that momentum rolling into the Pac-12.
No, he certainly has. And I remember watching some of the battle for Atlantis. I think that was over Thanksgiving, the Thanksgiving holiday. And it's so bizarre how college basketball seasons can turn, because if you look at North Carolina, a team you already referenced, I believe North Carolina is 2-0 against the Pac-12 team, so with also a win over UCLA, and just well below 500 now against everyone else. Now, there certainly are a couple injuries, and like you mentioned, Cole Anthony, but it's interesting how sometimes results early in the season don't really matter nearly as much in college basketball as I think they do in other sports. And clearly the Ducks were still figuring some things out. They've added Nafali Dante. He's been a big piece. He wasn't around for that North Carolina game. And, you know, Dana Altman, Oregon's head coach, he clearly knows what he's doing, too. They've had a lot of tournament success under him. So it's been a very, very entertaining season for the Ducks so far, I would say.
It has been. And so basketball is my forte. Big Ben, it's football, and we kind of split on baseball. So my Saturdays and weeknights are filled with watching hoops. And so I've watched a little Ducks play. I saw them stumble in Colorado against the Buffs. But Thad Boyle's got a great team, a veteran team. But what I noticed, and I didn't know this player, you know, Chris Duarte, I think he was a National JUCO Player of the Year. That was the first time I really saw him. You know, he's about 6'7", 6'8". He can shoot it. He can handle it. He can distribute. And if we go back to last night against USC, he had 30 points and 8 steals. It seems like he's been playing better and better. And then Mathis, who I believe played in high school with Peyton, he scuffled a little bit. What have you noticed about some of the other Ducks players beyond Pritchard?
Well, I mean, obviously you mentioned Duarte, and he's a guy that really stands out because I think every single college basketball team, you know, even if you have a guy like Peyton Pritchard that you just kind of know what you're going to get, you have to have those reliable second and third options. And I think that that's really what he's turned into, you know, pulling up his stats. He's now almost averaging 14 points per game behind Peyton Pritchard's 20. And he's also grabbing nearly 6 rebounds, assist and a half, a steal and a half. He's really kind of filling up the box score, and that's exactly what you're looking for. And what one other guy I wanted to mention too is Will Richardson. He's a sophomore guard, and Will, from my perspective, he played a lot as a freshman. I thought that he struggled at times, but you know, he's really kind of come on, I think, as a sophomore under Dana Altman. I think he's really kind of expanded his game. And once again, like I mentioned earlier, I think he's like another scoring option, because really you need to have those third and fourth scoring options. If we end up talking about a team like Oregon State later, Oregon State just doesn't really have those extra scoring options behind a Trace Tinkle and Ethan Thompson. I think the Ducks do have that, and we're really starting to see a lot more depth on their roster.
Yeah, we definitely are. That Colorado game, Peyton got in foul trouble, and it was some of the other players like Will Richardson and Mathis that had to step up. And I think for them to get where they want to be, you know, Sweet 16, Final Four, a chance of winning it all, they're very guard perimeter heavy. You know, yeah. They need some help from their bigs, who right now do the dirty work and defend, but they're going to need some of their bigs to step it up to go a little further. Now, before we get to the Beavs, we'll talk a little bit about USC. So they're freshmen. Sensation, I'm going to butcher his name, Unaka, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, I never want to say that I'm the pronunciation guy. I'm usually not the best at that. So we'll go ahead with that right there. But I definitely know who you're talking about.
Yeah, he came in from Chino Hills. Little tidbit, he played with the Ball Brothers. He was the same age as LaMelo Ball. And here at WST, we do bold predictions. And he's taken the Pac-12 by storm. A lot of people thought he'd come in and maybe come off the bench, but he's starting, leading the team in points and rebounds. I think he had 6 blocks last night. And a comp in the NBA is maybe Bam in Miami. You know, some have said maybe a Sean Marion. He's very athletic, 6'7", 6'8". Here's my bold prediction. Chino Hills High School, Los Angeles, will get 2 first-round draft picks this summer, with LaMelo going top 3, and Unake, I think, will go anywhere from 16 to 20. He's looked great. I don't know if he's going to win Freshman Player of the Year, but I think he's up there to be, you know, second or third, and to see his day, see his name in lights in the green room in June.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly, coming into the season, I think in terms of Pac-12 freshmen, we certainly heard a lot about a couple of the guys up at Washington, and Isaiah Stewart, McDaniels, and things like that. And then also, I had the opportunity to see some of the Arizona guys, you know, Nico Mannion, Josh Green. I saw those guys at the Nike Hoop Summit, and they were just incredible. Nico Mannion in particular really caught my eye early. But you mentioned it. I mean, USC... Andy Enfield can absolutely recruit. There's no doubt about that. And I think they have a very, very interesting team. And they really do have their collection of big guys. I actually think John Canzano from the Oregonian, I think I saw him tweet this last night, that if you could take Oregon's guards and USC's bigs, then you'd really, really have a team to work with. So it's a fun year, I would say, throughout the conference. I think that there's more parity. I think that while maybe the Pac-12 doesn't have that final four level team necessarily. I think the depth of the conference is really good, but if you look at college basketball as a whole, there is no dominant team out there anyway. So I'm not necessarily sure that it's a bad thing that the Pac-12 doesn't seem to have a dominant team or two. I think it could be a really good sign come tournament time that maybe for the first time in quite a while, maybe the Pac-12 can get 2, 3, 4 teams who through to the Sweet 16. I think that'd be really cool.
That would be great. So if we head up to Corvallis, what can you tell us about the Beavers? I know they got Tinkle. He's neck and neck with Pritchard leading the Pac-12 in scoring. Can you talk a little bit about the Beavs and what his seasons look like?
So Oregon State played a fairly weak non-conference schedule overall and did well against it. And I think expectations for the team was really high just because returning Trace Tinkle, a Pac-12 player of the year candidate who could have gone to the NBA last year. And then also guard Ethan Thompson is back along with their center, Kyler Kelly, who will play in professional basketball somewhere. But it's been a disappointing run these last few games for the Beavers. I think they've dropped 4 of their last 5 in Pac-12. They fell at home to UCLA last night in a really hard-fought game. The Bruins under Mick Cronin, their first-year coach, just kind of, I thought, bullied Oregon State. They were really physical with Trace Tinkle and Ethan Thompson, and there just wasn't a whole lot of offense. So I think Oregon State certainly has the talent to kind of put things together and go on a little bit of a second-half Pac-12 run, but it's been pretty discouraging as of late because Washington really handled Oregon State pretty well, and then the Beavers went and lost at Washington State, and they came right back and lost to UCLA. So it's a weird Oregon State team where they beat Colorado, and they throttled Arizona at home too. So it's just like a feast or famine weird team, and I'm not really sure kind of where the Beavers are at right now, but I guess you could say that about a lot of different Pac-12 teams.
Now, what would the Beavs need to do to get hot at the right time, win the Pac-12 tournament, and get a ticket to the big dance?
Well, it would obviously start with, you know, Trace Tinkle just going on one of those runs that we've seen from, you know, other teams throughout the NCAA tournament. I mean, you know, a Kemba Walker, a Shabazz Napier or whatever. He's not that exact type of position, but he could certainly do that. And really, the Beavers just kind of need more depth. We were talking earlier about how I think Oregon has so many guys that can score. I think they've got a lot of guys that can get you 12, 14, 16 points in a game. I'm just not really sure Oregon State has that like fourth guy. And I don't know if someone's just going to emerge, whether it's one of the freshmen, they have a couple junior college transfers, but yeah, or Oregon State just they're missing a piece. You know, if this was the NBA, I think you'd see him trade a first round pick for Derrick Rose or something. I mean, it just doesn't work that way in college basketball, but it just feels like Oregon State's one piece short.
Now, for our fans who haven't seen Tinkle play, how would you describe his game?
So he's kind of a stretch four type where he's like a 6'7" kind of swing man perimeter. Well, to say he's perimeter oriented isn't really fair. He's been shooting a good percentage from three this year. A lot of people compare him to Doug McDermott just because he's that height and body type, and he's white, and he's, you know, it's a very common college comparison. But Dougie McBuckets, in fairness, was a better player than Trace Tinkle is. But I do think Trace can certainly score from basically anywhere on the court. His inside outside game is good. He's also a very strong passer, and I think while he isn't an amazing athlete, he is a good team defender. So I think that Trace will get a shot in the NBA. He's shooting, I think he was shooting around 50% from three as of a couple weeks ago. He's gotten a little bit colder the last couple of games, but he's having a very strong senior season. It's possible that he will break Gary Payton's school record for points. Obviously, Payton is NBA Hall of Famer. So Trace Tinkle is one of the better players in Oregon State basketball history. He only played in one NCAA tournament because the Beavers have kind of been a sort of a mediocre 500 team for a lot of his career, but I guess he has a shot to get hot and carry them into the postseason.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that the Beavers haven't played on a national TV schedule, or they've experienced a kind of success where people can hear about his game. But if you watch him, he's solid all around. He does the little things, and he can score.
He can definitely score.
Now, if we move up to Washington, we'll start with the Huskies. You know, they came in with a loaded freshman class. They got a transfer from Kentucky, Quade Green. But they got off to a slow start in Pac-12. What are some of the reasons why you think the Huskies have started struggling coming into this new year?
Well, it's always difficult when you're having to add, even if they're as talented as an Isaiah Stewart or a Raekwon Battle who's come on late, even when they're, when guys are this talented, even, or I should say, even when they're this talented, you still have to integrate them. And the Huskies did lose some pieces off last year's team that kind of surprised a lot of people with what they were able to do, whether it was a Jalen Noel or a Mathis Thybulle, who's, I think, playing phenomenally well in the NBA now. Yeah. So, you know, the Huskies just they did have some holes to plug, and I really like everything I've seen from Isaiah Stewart. He has a just a perfect body, exactly what you're looking for in a big. And you know, Jaden McDaniels, I know that statistically he's having a really good year as well. I will admit, a couple of the games that I've watched, he can kind of float here and there. And then another big thing with Washington, his name is escaping me right now, but they lost their point guard right before Pac-12 play.
Quade Green.
Yeah, you already mentioned. Yeah, Quade, exactly. Yeah. So losing him was really, really tough. So I think that Washington is a team that is clearly improving. I think Washington is going to be a much better team in a month than they are right now. Heck, I think we already saw Washington make a big step by blowing out Oregon State and then taking Oregon right to the wire. I watched both of those games and was really impressed. And I have to give a shout out to my man, Marcus Sahonis from Jefferson High School down here in Portland. Marcus, a guy I watched a million times in high school. I really like him. He's a really interesting player, and he's had a nice couple of games there against Oregon and Oregon State. And I think Marcus is going to get a lot of run here the rest of the year, since Washington's got to have some guard show up.
Big shout out to Marcus. Yeah, Quade Green was leading the team in assists right around five. From a three-point perspective, he had hit the most threes. So hopefully Marcus and some of the other guards can step up and get UW playing at the right level. If we go back to Isaiah Stewart, so I believe he's had nine double-doubles. He's averaging close to 18, nine rebounds. But when you look at the draft board, like, Jaden is higher than him. Like, how would you compare and contrast the styles of the two freshmen?
I mean, I totally understand. I don't agree with that. I think that Isaiah Stewart is the better player. And I think part of it is because I can be a little simple-minded at times. And just when you look at them, those are actually two guys that I have seen play in person at the high school level. And well, I didn't see Isaiah in high school, but I saw him play with other high school kids at the Nike Hoop Summit. And Isaiah is just a guy that looks like he could be, I think I first met him about 9-10 months ago, and just like, oh my goodness, you have an NBA body right now. And it's something that just jumps out to me with the athleticism and the body. It's hard to imagine that failing. And then you look at a guy like Jaden, who is a really, really skilled basketball player, definitely at this point in time, is just a more skilled ball handler and has a lot more of a perimeter game element to him than Isaiah does. But the thing is that in the NBA, it's become, you know, such a perimeter game. It's all about spacing and shooting three-pointers. And while I think that Isaiah certainly has shown that he has a nice, post up, he can certainly turn around and knock down like a 12-15 foot jump shot. I don't think that he's really shown that, you know, longer range yet, whereas I think probably scouts feel that Jaden is more projectable in terms of becoming a good three-point shooter, and maybe they also view him because he's longer as a potentially a more versatile defender. But really, I think they're both fascinating pieces. I think it's really cool that Mike Hopkins is playing them together, because they really don't do the same thing. They're obviously both tall, big guys, but they do very different things on the court, and it's been kind of cool to watch both of them together. And I haven't really looked at the latest mock drafts, but I have to imagine both of them will go pretty early in the draft.
Yeah, I think both them have, they're like in the top 12, no matter which one you look at. You know, they both have the size. I think you're right. You know, one is more of a more versatile wing, and you know, the NBA has gone to the stretch four, stretch five. You got to defend multiple positions.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why Stewart's a little bit lower as of right now.
That's probably, I mean, it's probably as simple as that. And yeah, I just pulled it up because I was curious. Isaiah's 1-for-9 from the year from three, whereas Jaden is 25 of 75. So it's pretty obvious, you know, neither one of them are shooting a great percentage, but it's very obvious that Jaden is taking a lot of threes or taking a decent amount of threes. And I would say that his shot is pretty projectable. Isaiah, I absolutely love what he brings. I think that, again, I will say it again, I don't see how he could fail. I think he has a lot of potential, but maybe scouts feel his ceiling is just a little bit lower because the NBA is such a perimeter game.
Maybe he'll prove him wrong.
Maybe. I wouldn't be surprised. He's an unbelievable, unbelievable two-way player. He really is.
All right. Now, if we move over to Big Ben's Washington State Cougars, I had a zinger for him. I thought he was going to be on. I was going to say the only highlight of this year is retiring Clay Thompson's jersey.
Well, I don't know about that after what they did last weekend against the Oregon schools, right?
I know. I'll have to take back that statement, but Kyle Smith has him playing well. I mean, what can you tell us about the Cougars?
Washington State is probably one of the Pac-12 teams I've seen the least out of this year, just because, like, he's first year coach. They're definitely rebuilding. I know that they had an up and down non-conference slate, but yeah, I mean, the Cougs have clearly found something. I know that Kyle Smith, if you look at his results from USF, they were always kind of in the middle of the West Coast Conference, but I think that he always had the respect of his peers. I think that they really felt that he was the type of coach that would get, you know, the most out of the players he had. And I think if you look at what USF is doing this year, I think they're having actually one of their best seasons in a while. So I think Kyle Smith brought in a lot of talent, and you really have to like what they're doing so far this year. I certainly know against Oregon State, CJ Ellaby and then Isaac Bonten. He was a guy from Park Rose High School right here in Oregon, a guy that Oregon and Oregon State didn't recruit. He had tremendous games against Oregon State, and I believe he played pretty well against Oregon too. But the Cougs are just one of those classic Pac-12 teams right now where I think they can beat almost anyone any given night. They are not this pushover at all. They are not going to just show up and get run over. I mean, they have shown the ability to play with Oregon, to beat Oregon, the best team in the conference. They really did well against Oregon State. And I think they're going to pick off several more wins, particularly up there in Pullman as the season goes on.
All right. Well, as we wrap up basketball, my last question for you, how many Pac-12 teams do you think are going to get into the NCAA tournament this year?
That is such a brutal question to ask in late January. To me, it feels
why
like
I asked it.
If I'm going to say five, I think that the league, as we've already discussed, it is very solid overall. I mean, Oregon might get, you know, a 2 or 3 seed and have a really good shot to make a deep run. But I think we're going to see a lot of Pac-12 teams get those, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 seeds right in there, that meaty part where they'll be maybe favored in the first round and then have to pull a mild upset to make it to the Sweet 16. I see a lot of Pac-12 teams that could be really, really dangerous. I mean, Oregon is dangerous. I think Arizona can be dangerous. Certainly, USC has the ability to be dangerous. I mean, Washington, if they can figure some things out. We've already talked a little bit about Colorado. There are a lot of Pac-12 teams in there that I think you could see getting into the NCAA tournament, and not just getting in, but maybe winning a game or two. So I hope the answer is five. I don't want things to turn the other way. It's been a rough few years for Pac-12 men's basketball. I think we need to see some teams have some success.
We do. I agree. I think it's going to be 4 to 5. Another team that you didn't mention, but we're still waiting for that marquee win, is Stanford. You know,
I think they have
16 wins today. Mm-hmm. They have D'Souza. They've got some other components. Jared Haas has the program going in the right direction, but they lost to Kansas. They lost to USC, lost to other people. They're going to need a big win against like an Arizona or Oregon and to go far in the tournament to go, because their non-conference has been a little bit weak at Stanford. So I think we can get 4 to 5. So let's hope we can.
I hope so.
All right. Now, if we transition over to Pac-12 baseball, let's talk about the Beavs. They've had a great run at a national level and Pac-12. What can our fans expect from the Beavers in the baseball this coming year?
You know, it's funny, actually, because kind of just like in men's basketball, where I'm not sure the Pac-12 team, you know, has that top five level team. Baseball is weirdly kind of the same way this year. If you look at the main preseason polls, Arizona State is coming in around 9th or 10th, and that's the top rated Pac-12 team. And no Northwest team is currently ranked. I think Oregon State did get one in one of the polls. Oregon State was ranked 25th. But I think it's going to be just an interesting, weird year of transition for a lot of these Pac-12 teams, because Oregon State has a new coach in Mitch Canham. Oregon has a new coach in Mark Wisnowski, and Washington State has a new head coach as well. Washington's the only team bringing back its head coach with Lindsey Meggs. So there's going to be a lot of unknowns, I think, throughout really the entire Pac-12, but certainly among those Northwest schools. And I think pretty much all of them have talent. This isn't a question of we're not sure where the talent level is. There's just the draft, all these teams were hit hard in the draft, speaking specifically from Oregon State. The number one overall pick, Adley Rutschman, was taken by the Baltimore Orioles. So really all these teams, it's kind of a year of unknowns, and it'll be really fascinating to see kind of how Pac-12 baseball takes shape this year.
Yeah, and USC hired Jason Gill, new coach. He was from LMU. It seems like USC, a storied program. I believe they still have the most national championships for baseball, but they've been cycling through coaches right and left over the last 5 or 6 years. So we'll see what goes on in LA as well. As far as some new names and faces, who should we look out for in the Beavers lineup this year?
Yeah, I mean, they certainly have a really strong freshman class coming in that they like. Probably the top name to look for there is freshman outfielder JD McLaughlin. I know that the coaching staff thinks that he's a guy that could maybe step in and play right away, but there are some other returners back that made all Pac-12. First baseman Alex McGarry and closer Jake Mulholland. Those guys are both experienced, and I think are going to really, really help Oregon State, you know, pitching and on offense. And then really throughout the whole pitching staff, I mean, you got Christian Chamberlain, Nathan Burns, Jake Fennings, Joey Munt. These were all pitchers that saw the mound last year. Not necessarily in the biggest roles necessarily, because Grant Gambrell and Brandon Eisert, two of their top starters, went to the draft. And then their most highly touted arm, Kevin Abel, who was a hero at the College World Series, he underwent Tommy John surgery in, I believe, March. And his return, he may or may not be back sometime this year. We'll see. But there are going to be a lot of fresh faces throughout Oregon State's lineup. It will definitely be a bit of a different look. But last year was a little bit of a different look too, because they had the three first round draft picks they lost off their national championship team.
Yeah, so it will be a little transition for Oregon. Hopefully they aren't rebuilding, they're just reloading with that old adage.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what they believe they're doing, but you know, it's still a first year head coach, and it's still a lot of unknowns. But I guess that's what makes college sports fun. There's always unknowns.
And you were out in Omaha when the Beavers won it a couple years back, right?
Yeah, I was. They made it in 2017 and didn't win. And then they brought back almost the entire team the next year in 18 and won it all. So yeah, I was there for both of those years. So if you're ever in Omaha and want to know where to eat or what to do, I can give you some recommendations.
Yeah, so Big Ben's birthday's in June, and we've talked about going out to the College Baseball World Series, and this maybe is the year that we actually do it. So we might have to hit you up for some of those recommendations.
It's honestly, it really is an unbelievably cool event. Whether you're the team that you're rooting for is there or not, or you just want to watch a couple games or hang out, they do such an amazing job with the event, and there's so much going on with the stadium. And Omaha's kind of a cool mix, because it's, you know, it's not like a real big city or anything, but it's not some tiny little city either. It's about 1 million people that live there. So it's a really good in between, and the community completely embraces the event. It truly is a great time. The The weather can be a little schizophrenic, but other than that, it's a really fun, fun place to hang out for the College World Series.
Yep. Just grab a cold beverage and an Omaha steak and you're good to go.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, before we let you go, you want to tell our fans where they can find you online and how they can read up on some of your stuff that you're writing?
Yeah, absolutely. So most of my stuff, I am a freelancer, but you can find a lot of my stuff on OregonLive.com. And then also, while I'm on with you, I'm actually currently working on an Oregon State baseball book on those 2017 and 2018 teams. So still in the moderate early stages of that. But at some point in time, there will be an Oregon State baseball book out there. So hopefully that sells at least a couple copies. And yeah, just watch Pac-12 men's and women's basketball and then some baseball. And it's going to be a pretty busy few months here coming up, which it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Well, you got a couple copies. Big Ben and I will buy it. And you got to come online and talk a little bit about the book. I think that will be a great kind of story as you talk about the career and talk about the trajectory of Oregon State baseball, because they were a hidden gem up in the Pacific Northwest for a long time. But after they got to Omaha and they won it the next year, it used to be, oh, it's USC and UCLA and Pac-12 baseball. Now it's all about the Beavers, trying to catch up with the Beavers.
Yeah, it is interesting. It is interesting how things can change. But, you know, there are a lot of Pac-12 teams out there that are looking to knock Oregon State off. And I think Arizona State, Stanford, UCLA, always these programs are coming. It's very, very competitive.
All right. Well, Bob Lundeberg, Oregon Sports Live freelance writer, thanks for joining the show. We got to have you back on soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Kyle.
Seattle, Portland, LA, San Fran, San Diego, Scottsdale, Phoenix. This is Kay Wynn.
And Big Ben.
And we are Western Standard Time. WSD Podcast. We're everywhere online. Podbean, iTunes, Apple Podcast. What do we talk about, Ben?
We got all sports, NBA, NFL, MLB, Pac-12, WCC. If it's on the West Coast, we got you covered.
You know what else we got you covered? A little lifestyle, a little fun, a little banter to lighten up your day. There are 5-minute life guides.
So whether you live in Seattle, Kansas City, Frisco, Texas, Boston, Worcester, Florida, and you love West Coast sports, make sure you follow us, download us. New episode every Friday.
And we're out.
Boom.
Boom.